It's the 2009 State School Superintendent Candidate Debate, live from Wisconsin Public Television Studios in Madison.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Wisconsin Public Radio State Capitol reporter Sean Johnson, moderating tonight's one-hour debate together with my television colleague, Frederica Freiberg.
Tonight, we will get to know the two candidates locked in a race that will determine who will lead our public schools for the next 4 years.
The format tonight will include questions submitted by citizens around the state and some questions from the moderators. Also, each candidate will ask a question of his or her opponent.
And later, the candidates will spend 10 minutes or so discussing, just between themselves, with no moderator or interruption, what they believe is the best way to improve schools in Milwaukee.
Let's welcome the candidates. Rose Fernandez lives in Waukesha, where she helps run a family-owned business. Ms. Fernandez is a former pediatric trauma nurse at Children's Hospital of Wisconsin, and she's known for her virtual schools advocacy.
Candidate Tony Evers lives in Madison. He's worked in education for 34 years, the last 8 of which he has served as deputy state superintendent of public instruction. Evers has also worked as an administrator and teacher in Toma, Verona, and Oshkosh.
Let's get right to some questions. The candidates will have a minute each to respond to the topic, and we'll start with the first one. Both of you say you're supportive of teachers, but what about the state's teachers union? Tony Evers, you have the endorsement of that union, WEAC. We'll hear from you in a minute on why you support that group's agenda. But first, Rose Fernandez, let's start with a minute on your position on the teachers union.
My husband is a union firefighter, and so we are a union family. Unions have value, and the teacher labor union does have a role to play in public education. I believe, though, that they have more significance in policy at the Department of Public Instruction currently than they should. And I think that when we put our children first and the interests of their learning, their achievement, at the forefront of every decision that we make, whether it's about spending or about policy or programming or the direction that we need to take our public school system, we will be free to embrace new things and look for the answers that a fresh perspective will bring us.
Tony Evers.
Sure. I'm proud to have the support of the teacher union in Wisconsin, but that's not where it ends. And that's the important thing for people to understand, is that I've run this race to engage the broadest coalition of people, actually ever, that to support a state superintendent's candidate. Administrators, teachers, charter school advocates, parents, grandparents, school board members, and that's the way it has to work. That's the only way we can move forward in the state, is to make sure that the state superintendent not only has a broad coalition in order to get elected, that's important, but once you get elected, you have to have a broad base of support in order to govern. And having those disparate interest groups that are all child advocates, whether they're teacher union folks or they're board members or grandmas or grandpas, they're all child advocates. And having that broad coalition is what's going to make my campaign, frankly, and my administration different than my opponents.
I think we move along now to our second question, and this one goes first to you, Mr. Evers, for 1 minute. It is a citizen question. It comes from Gary Powell of Madison. He asks what the candidates' positions are on merit pay for teachers.
Great. And great question, Gary. The president has, President Obama has talked about that in recent days and certainly has ratcheted up the interest in merit pay. Here's where I stand at this point in time. I am a believer in a system of rewarding teachers for great service and great training. And right in the time, spending a lot of our efforts on a whole master educator effort, which is a effort, and then also a professional board certified effort, which is a national certification. And both of those systems that are highly rigorous and people have to work hard to do it. It's similar to what my daughter as an obstetrician has to go through when she has her board exams, where you take your portfolio of work and take it to experts around the country in order to take a look at that work as it compares to student learning. And then those experts give feedback back. I think that's a great way to start. We will be, of course, in the future, as more ideas come on.
1 minute.
Moving
sir.
From that.
Excuse me.
Thank you.
Ms. Fernandez, go ahead.
My independence will allow me to work with the legislature to put a real merit pay system in place that isn't based on a teacher's training and their certification, but is based on the outcome in the classroom. We need to have compensation tied to evaluation with concrete outcomes that measure student learning and reward teachers based on their performance in the classroom. That's where our great hope lies in bringing the best and the brightest into the classroom, is encouraging their professional development, giving teachers more control over decision-making in their schools, over the things that have impact in the classroom, bringing them to the table whenever we can in decisions that involve what we value in the classroom, what we're looking for learning attainment, and the standards that we would establish for merit pay would be established based on the input of our teachers, not only just administrators, but our teachers would be tied in very, very intricately into standards that would determine their compensation.
That is your time as well. I wanted to ask a follow-up on that, Tony Evers. Would any merit pay plan that you would endorse be strictly tied to the certification of master teachers or other teachers that would go on to get additional certification, or could it be kind of just for a classroom teacher who was excelling?
Oh, absolutely. But the National Board of Certification is tied to a national certification, not necessarily state certification. But the important thing with that, it is tied to student achievement. It is based on meritorious service, but it is not necessarily at the national one connected with our licensing program.
I think we can leave it. Did you have a? Something
May
you
I say
to add
that, I also think that merit pay gives us the opportunity to empower the managers in our schools to dismiss the teachers who shouldn't be in the classroom. Ineffective teachers don't bring us the results that we're looking for, and it's one side of the coin is giving compensation to those who are excelling. The other side is being able to move those out of the classroom who aren't meeting our expectations.
I think we're going to have more time to get into some of these issues in a minute. You look like you're poised to speak, but I think we're going to send it over to Sean for the next question.
Yeah, merit pay leads nicely into our next question, which also gets into how much teachers earn. What's your position on the Qualified Economic Offer, also known as the QEO? That's the go-to offer of a 3.8% increase in salary and benefits for teachers if a district can't come to an agreement with the local teachers' union. Rose Fernandez, please take 1 minute to answer this question, followed by Tony Evers.
I support retention of the QEO. I believe that we face great peril in the short term here with placing our school in a position where they may become the enemy of our taxpayer. Our taxpayer is stretched in every direction possible. We have increasing demands in every corner of the state budget. I am the voice saying that the answer is not always more money. I'm concerned about investment in education, certainly, but very, very concerned with what the return on that investment, making sure that our dollars are directed appropriately for the results that we know lead to success for our students and lead to bringing their dreams to reality, preparing them for post-secondary study or study in our tech schools. And I think that the QEO is one means, along with other measures I support, that we should have equalization of funding to protect the districts that may struggle more with their tax base and their ability to contribute. And I think that we have to have ability for referendum to continue also.
All right. Tony Evers?
The answer to this question, I also have to put other questions in context. I'm fortunate to be able to rely on 34 years of experience in public education to answer these questions where my opponent cannot rely on that experience. I have bargained on both sides of the table. I understand what bargaining is about. I understand also I've hired teachers and I've fired teachers in my career. But the important thing relative to the QEO is this: at a state level, we have slipped below the national average, and if we want to make sure that we're able to hire the best and the brightest, we have to have adequate and competitive salaries. It's as simple as that. In turn, from a different angle, basically, I will say I am philosophically opposed to a QEO. It's wage controls on one certain group of individuals within a society or an enterprise. We have to move away from it. But I'm in favor of moving it away from it in the context of a broader discussion of bargaining law, arbitration law, revenue limits.
And that's time.
And that's time.
All right. Ms. Fernandez, could you address some of that? I mean, Tony Evers says that the QEO has caused salaries in Wisconsin for teachers to fall behind the national average. What do you think of that in 30 seconds?
I think Wisconsin has every right to the management of our schools in a responsible fashion that protects our taxpayer. We don't want to go back to the 1980s when arbitration brought us the nightmares of ever-increasing property taxes and ever calls for more money. My opponent often answers questions about needs for the future with that one word answer, that money is the answer. For me, that isn't always the answer, and we need to work with the funds that we have now.
And Tony Evers, just real quick, if we do take off the QEO, will we go back to the days of regular double-digit property tax increase?
There's no guarantee in that. One could make a logical argument that the fact there has not been bargaining going on for the last X number of years, that innovative things relative to health insurance and actual bargaining, give and take of bargaining, there hasn't been bargaining for the most part. And as I said, I've had experience going on both sides. There's no guarantee that the QEO is gone, that it shoots to the roof. But I will say, because it's been such a part of our funding system, it has to be handled comprehensively with other issues. If we cherry pick one, we will lose the effort.
We're going to move along here and do something a little bit different. In addition to asking serious questions tonight about the candidates' positions on the issues, we have a handful of what we're calling fun fact questions. Questions we hope will tell us a little bit about the person behind the candidate. Now, these are meant to be answered very briefly, candidates, a couple of sentences at most. And so I wanted to direct the first one to Tony Evers and then have you respond to it as well. It is, what type of student were you? Were you the type who sat in the front of the class or in the back?
I sat in the back of the class. But I learned a lot from the back of the class.
Okay.
You watch people's interaction in front of you.
Rose Fernandez, what type were you?
And I sat in front. I'm an oldest child. I was right up there in front.
All right. Well, thank you very much for that. We'll sprinkle those in, you know, throughout the evening just to get people laughing a little more relaxed. So, but our next question is a citizen question as well, and it comes from the superintendent of Brown Deer Schools. Her name is Dr. Deb Kerr. She asks this.
My question is, what type of reform or changes do you foresee with No Child Left Behind with the new president and new Secretary of Education?
Mr. Evers, your response for 1 minute.
That's a great question from Deb, because that's a question that people are asking all across the country. I believe, first of all, under No Child Left Behind, it hasn't been reauthorized, but we don't know that, you know, the final examples. But my hope, and one of the things that I am so keen on in this election and keen on in getting elected, because that decision is going to have to be made shortly after inauguration, and we have to have somebody with experience and knowledge be able to make that decision, is we should be able to be moving into a new accountability system very, very quickly under No Child Left Behind and under a new administration. Before, we've been locked into a situation where we were using a standardized test to make all sorts of judgments that really weren't adequately made. So I am very excited about the possibility of using growth model, using formative model, class information from classroom teachers in order to make wise decisions about children. This will be a golden time. However, I will say it's going to be very important that the person at the helm at that time knows something about testing and accountability.
Rose Fernandez, 1 minute.
I was very encouraged last week when President Obama agreed with me on looking at merit pay and the value that it places for our public education system nationally. Secretary of Education Arne Duncan has called all states to look at their educational standards. Here in Wisconsin, our education standards need work. Our education standards are ranking lower than they should be nationally, and we have fallen in those rankings in the last 10 years. Our standards are not only low, but they're fuzzy, and they don't give our teachers in the classroom the clear roadmap to success that we need to have in place, that not only teachers need, but our parents need to be able to make judgments, our taxpayers, our school boards, and that call for higher standards, higher expectations in Wisconsin public education is very much in the forefront of what we're looking for in Wisconsin, and will jive with what we're hoping for nationally with this new administration.
All right. It's time now for the candidates to be the ones asking questions. Each candidate came tonight prepared to ask a question of his or her opponent. Tony Evers will start by asking Rose Fernandez a question. We'll spend about 4 minutes on each question and answer. If time allows, Mr. Evers, you may ask a follow-up question. Go ahead with your question for Ms. Fernandez.
Ms. Fernandez, you represent a special interest, as you indicate on your website, virtual charter schools, and you support widespread expansion of tax-paid private school vouchers, and you have zero experience administering public schools at any level. How can Wisconsin's parents trust that you will actually invest in their children's classrooms and teachers and not push expansion of your own special interest?
My own special interest is the boys and girls growing up in the state of Wisconsin. My concern about the Department of Public Instruction came during a fight for particular charter public schools last year that were attacked by the teacher labor union, and the Department of Public Instruction joined in that fight to close some of our own public schools that were successful by all measures, very good test scores, high accountability. And rather than leading the effort to integrate a new type of learning into our public education system that wasn't even imagined at the time that open enrollment and charter school laws were written in the 90s, online learning was ignored by the Department of Public Instruction as a charter school model. They refused to talk to the superintendents who were running these excellent schools, the veteran teachers who were part of the faculties in these schools, and certainly had contempt for the parents who chose these schools as the best public school option for their children. That concern has brought me to the point where I think that that's emblematic of a defense of the system, a defense of the status quo, first and foremost, and a refusal to embrace innovation, to be willing to look at new ideas, new ways of doing things. And that's very concerning to me as a parent and as a concerned child advocate. As I said, I think that when we put children first, when we make decisions that serve their best learning needs, and we put aside the concerns of the special interests who may have agenda in these issues, and the concern of always fighting for the bureaucracy, fighting for the status quo, fighting for business as usual in Madison, we will be able to discover the answers to many of the problems that have vexed us for years. And at this time, during this election, I think that it gives us an opportunity to weigh the benefits of different kinds of experience. Certainly, my opponent's resume is a long resume of service to our public education system, and I honor him and commend him for that service. But a resume that lists various positions and years inside the bureaucracy doesn't guarantee and often prevents you from having the broader vision, the ability to look outside the answers that have been in place. And we need a fresh perspective outside the bureaucracy, outside the education establishment, and frankly, outside of the business-as-usual Madison way of doing things. And that's what I bring to this. I have a strong background in hospital executive management in a high-stress, high-stakes trauma room setting where children's lives are on the line. And I'm involved here because I believe that children's lives are on the line in classrooms all over Wisconsin. And I have a sense of urgency about correcting the things that will make a difference for their futures. And that urgency and the freedom that I have as an independent advocate for children will bring us to the answers that will serve our children best.
And now, Rose Fernandez, it is your turn to ask your question of Tony Evers. 4 minutes in this segment, and you will get follow-up questions as time allows.
Dr. Evers, given the fact that the Madison-based Teachers Union has already spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on your campaign, people doubt your ability to be an independent voice at the Department of Public Instruction. Can you list three reform initiatives that are opposed by WEAC that you support?
Absolutely. And I don't know where exactly you came up with that figure, but I need to repeat what I talked about before. When the Teachers Association in the state of Wisconsin is endorsing me, and as you know, the people that work and belong to that organization are the people that do the hard work in our schools. They're the ones that we need to honor for all the hard work they've done. So I will never ever back away from their support for me. But yes, have they disagreed with decisions we've made in the last 8 years? Absolutely, and it happens all the time. But that's why you have to have a broad coalition of people. This isn't about this overwhelming group of people that are driving policy at the state level. That just isn't fact. We, of all the different groups that support public education, whether it's parent, the PTA organization, whether it's the Teachers Association, whether it's the Principals Association, all folks that are generally supporting my campaign, they agree on 99% of all the educational issues. And so if we happen to agree with WEAC on a particular case or a particular issue, then indeed I would suggest that all the other child advocate organizations that we've been involved with have also agreed with that. So it's not just one interest group, it's all the groups. And that's why having a broad coalition is so darn important, so you can govern effectively. Answer a specific question. Indeed, during that lawsuit that you referenced before, which I disagree with your analysis of how it played out, we at the department were essentially looking at our constitutional ability or constitutional duty to make sure that laws weren't broken. That's what this is all about. It was not to do with online learning. Good Lord, we've invested hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars in online learning in the state of Wisconsin. So it wasn't opposition to that. It was an opposition to the way that Northern Ozaukee School District played it out. And indeed, the judge validated our discussion. We moved on. But that particular settlement was not a settlement that, as you know, I remember you even praised Superintendent Burmester for taking a lead on that. That was not sitting very well with the association. They disagreed with our solution. Similarly, in charter schools, there are unions around the state of Wisconsin that believe charter schools are not for everybody, or that they might be a danger. I support charter schools. Always have supported charter schools. I am supportive of independent charter schools, especially the good ones, such as Bruce Guadalupe School in Milwaukee and Tenor High School. So there are a number of cases where we do, but there you just can't assume that because there is agreement on an issue that it's a WEAC issue. I'm telling you that it's a wide variety of issues that all the stakeholders who are child advocates, they are child advocates, they have agreed on.
I would still like to hear what the three reform efforts are that you will support that WEAC would oppose.
As I just told you, they were opposed to the settlement on the virtual charter school, and we agreed with you. So that
DPI was not part of that solution, Deputy Superintendent Evers. DPI came late to that game after the bipartisan bill was already through.
I can't disagree with you more.
I'm sorry to stop this. We're going to have to move on, though.
We'll have to agree to disagree on this one.
Our next question comes
from every debate.
Our next question comes from a Milwaukee School District curriculum specialist. Her name's Deborah Evans. She asks, while the majority of Wisconsin students seem to thrive across the state, children of color continue to fall behind. What are your plans to ensure that all children, regardless of race or economic status, receive a quality education and don't get left behind? Ms. Fernandez, first to you.
I have been talking about the racial disparity in Wisconsin throughout this campaign. I consider it an embarrassment to our state. It is not only an educational failure, but it is a social failure, a fiscal failure, and a moral failure. And it is a failure on the part of the Department of Public Instruction. It is a failure to recognize one of our biggest problems and tackle it and put things in place that can make a difference. When Deputy Superintendent Evers took office at the Department of Public Instruction 8 years ago, we could have very much the same discussion about the racial disparity that still exists today. That cannot be true 4 years from now. We have to put measures in place, and among those would be high expectations across the board for every child in Wisconsin public schools, no matter where they live, no matter what the struggles are in their homes and in their families. We cannot give in to the excuses that the problem is too big and that we cannot make an impact. We have to begin getting the job done.
That's time. Tony Evers?
Well, I know for sure that pointing fingers will not close the achievement gap. What we do know are things that work, and that we have been working on them all along in the past 8 years. We know that small class sizes. I've met with parents in a Milwaukee school district this past week, several in small groups. The number one thing they always talk about as it relates to closing the achievement gap is small class sizes. And that's proven by our literature, too. We have to make sure we do that. And additionally, as the Federal Bank of Minneapolis and other organizations throughout our country have talked about, is investing in early childhood. The investment in early childhood and the investment in small class sizes has begun to shrink the achievement gap. Is it gone? Absolutely not. Is it a complex issue, as Ms. Fernandez talked about it, connected to poverty, connected to nutrition, connected to the fact that central cities are deteriorating and parents don't have jobs? It's connected with all that. It's going to take a while, but we need to continue to work on it.
All right. Our next question is another question on videotape. Tamara Williams is a second grade teacher at Hawthorne Elementary School in Milwaukee. Here's what she wants to know from the candidates.
How are they going to get our students to get to a point where they can compete, you know, as far as technology is concerned and the science and math? What is the goal?
That is for you, Tony Evers. One
sure.
Minute.
Yeah, one of the chief issues that I'm talking about in this campaign is to make sure that every child's a graduate that is both college ready and career ready with the 21st century skills needed to succeed. We brought in, as part of our standard improvement process that is ongoing and it will be completed within a couple years, we brought in a bunch of business leaders from around the state that talked to us about what are the things that they want for our 8th and 12th graders. And not surprisingly, academic improvement, it was what they talked about. But more importantly, they talked about the people skills, the ability to collaborate, the ability to work in a team, the ability to be creative and be entrepreneurial. That's the type of things that we're integrating into our standards. In turn, I also believe that we have to really look closely, especially at our urban high schools, and break down the barriers between secondary education and post-secondary education, particularly our technical colleges, because there's great opportunities for students to have that incentive to move forward if they're gaining college credit and technical college credit at the same time as high school credit. Thank you.
We need to move this now to Rose Fernandez.
The fact of the matter is that doesn't advance us towards the solutions when the Department of Public Instruction takes credit for all the things that it sees as successes in Wisconsin and ignores all the things that need work. This is a perfect example of that. The test scores in our urban districts are abysmal. We have test scores of 10th grade students in MPS who show that 70% of the students are not proficient in math and 60% can't read. This teacher is voicing real concern for students that she works with every day. We have to embrace these problems, do the things that matter, and get it done now. And my question to the Department of Public Instruction is, her question should have been answered long ago. What is taking so long to find the answers for a very good teacher asking questions about her students?
In fact, Mr. Evers, I wanted to ask you, I actually interviewed this teacher, and she was most concerned about technology in the classrooms and science and math learning and how the Department of Public Instruction would help her as a teacher and her school move forward. How would you do that?
We've been working very hard with a couple of organizations to provide Project Lead the Way is one of them, with the Kern Family Foundation, that is directly connected to not only bringing technology to schools, but making sure that schools have the providing interest in students becoming engineers and scientists when they leave schools. It's a middle school program. It's had great success. We've been just pleased with the cooperation with the Kern Family Foundation, and we believe that it's going to have great potential. But I have to go back to the idea that somehow we're just dismissing this. We have been working across the state of Wisconsin. The Lakeside Academy in Kenosha has a wonderful high-tech program that's connected with the technical college.
I lost track of the clock. I'm sorry. I was listening. Thank you, Sean.
We're going to move on. And as we mentioned earlier, in addition to asking some serious questions tonight about the candidates' positions on the issues, we have a handful of what we call fun fact questions, questions we hope will tell us a little bit about the person behind the candidate. Again, these are meant to be answered very briefly, and here's one of those questions. What was your favorite book that was assigned in high school? And this goes to you, Rose Fernandez.
I guess I probably enjoyed The Outsiders the most. I thought that that was a great story of kids and the things that they face and different approaches to things.
Tony Evers?
The Grapes of Wrath, and I read it every year since high school. Every time I read it, it reminds me of how careful we have to be as a society to treat people with respect and honor, and what happens when we don't. It's just such a moving tale. I think it's something that should be read every year by everybody. But I don't have a reading list.
DPR reading list.
No.
Here's another money question. It's a big money question. What specifically should be changed in the way we fund our schools, if anything, and why? This goes to Rose Fernandez first, then Tony Evers will respond.
What has to happen is that we have to be sure that the dollars that we're spending on education are giving us the results that we're looking for. The biggest change is those clear outcomes that are tangible, that are easily measured, that are communicable between all of the various groups that are concerned about education spending, and be sure that the dollars that we have set aside are bringing us the results that we're looking for. I believe that that is the crying need that we have now, is to look at how we can best direct our dollars for the benefit of our students, and eliminate every opportunity that we can for waste and for expenses that don't directly lead to learning.
Tony, I believe those outcomes are there, and they're plain as the nose on my face. Our state leads the country in ACT scores, or very close to it, over the last decade. We are high in SAT scores always. We lead in just about every measure. We have more National Merit Scholars and just about any per capita than all sorts of other states. Our schools are successful. I reject the idea, and I know I spent time up in Florence County last 2 years ago, and in Wausaukee County this last year, where communities absolutely were at each other's wits, at their wits' end, trying to figure out how to keep the school doors open. Absolutely, this is a horrible time to talk about money. We're in a deep, deep recession in this country, but the fact of the matter is there are districts out there, and when Ms. Fernandez talks about the idea that somehow it's all about outcomes, I say the outcomes are there, and we need to be concerned about these schools that are just absolutely at their wits' end. This is not the way we need to run our education system.
Great. The next question is from a citizen. This one, Beth Grau, a professor at the UW-Madison Department of Curriculum and Instruction. She asks, what are your goals for enhancing early childhood education in Wisconsin, and what plans do you have for the 4K program? First to you, Tony Evers.
Well, that's a great question. Because it's something that we need to be aware of, but I'm not going to be hypocritical as a candidate and say there's going to be money immediately to do this. Maybe we can leverage some of the infrastructure money. But the bottom line is we know that the return on investment for early childhood ranges anywhere from $13 to $7 for every dollar spent. That's the best investment a school district can make. So I believe that, especially in our urban areas, we do need to take a long, hard look to make sure that every child has access to quality early childhood. Why should it be that in subsidized child care, the ratio is 13 to 1 between a child care worker and the number of kids, and in four-year-old kindergarten, there in Milwaukee, it's 30 to 1 and more. We have to make sure that investment is being made. I don't believe we have the money to do it now, but that has to be a long-term goal.
Thank you. Rose Fernandez, your response.
Before I answer that, I need to go back to the issue of measures of success, because this is a critical difference between myself and my opponent. The fact of the matter is that ACT and SAT tests in Wisconsin are voluntary tests and taken by college prep students by and large. Our national rating on those tests will change when those tests are required within the Milwaukee Public School District very shortly. The measures of our state test results, there have been national studies released recently that blame Wisconsin for a sloppiness on the reporting of those results that really questions the honesty of the value of those results, whether the scales are being doctored in order to satisfy AYP ratings, and it causes great concern.
We need to leave it there, and you were unable in that instance to talk about early childhood education or answer the professor's question about the importance of it, and we need to move along. So now comes the time when Sean and I step away. For the next 10 minutes or so, the candidates will have a conversation, person to person, about what they believe can be done to help public schools in Milwaukee. Now, to set the table, let's look at a snapshot of some of the, frankly, rather grim statistics on MPS. It is the state's largest district with more than 86,000 students. 77% of those students are low income, compared to 34% of the students statewide. The habitual truancy rate at MPS is 49%, compared to 6% across Wisconsin. MPS 10th graders test very poorly on state standardized math tests, 46% of them showing minimal performance skills. Compare that to 16% statewide. And the dropout rate for MPS is 30%, compared to the statewide number of just over 8.5%. Now, just one more reminder that the candidates will discuss this topic without any interruption or direction from the moderators. We'll be here taking notes, as people may be doing at home. We're not even going to tell them how to start. So, candidates, the floor is yours on the issue of Milwaukee Public Schools. We'll let you know when to stop after 10 minutes.
Well, Dr. Evers, in several of our debates together, you have said that you consider every dropout in Wisconsin a million-dollar mistake. And I really need to ask you, given the dropout rates in MPS, which by some measures are 46%, even the most generous measure is 68%. So a third of the students who should be graduating or not. And I think that that represents billions of dollars of mistakes during your 8 years as deputy superintendent. And I'd like to hear your thoughts on the DPI's role in that and how we can allow that to continue.
Sure. And I have to point out to you that essentially laying this issue on my lap, it seems irrational. The problems at MPS have to do with not only what's going on in the school, and you know this, what's going on in the community. The central city of that city has essentially had its manufacturing base disappear over a period of 5 years, and all the good-paying jobs are gone. It is a community issue. It is a community issue, and that's where I have been working for the past 8 years, at that level, to make sure that the community members understand it. Do I find it acceptable? It is absolutely unacceptable, the dropout rate in Milwaukee, as several other things that are unacceptable relative to the school district. But I have to start out by talking about, even though in this horrible situation that we're in Milwaukee, I know you and I agree that there are good things going on in Milwaukee. There absolutely are schools, whether it's Rufus King or Bruce Guadalupe.
Certainly.
Or in Milwaukee, or Martin Luther King Jr. Mm-hmm. Elementary School. I've been in those schools. I've been in lots of those schools. I was at Barton School not too long ago, and President Bush gave them an award for being one of the high-flying schools in the country. So there are good things in Milwaukee, and every single day there is some teacher in that school working magic to lift kids out of poverty, out of the difficulties of being impoverished. So I know we can agree on that. But what we can do to change this, and what I've been doing for the last 8 years, I can tell you, and you continue to bring this up, and I'll continue to tell you the same answers. I've been working with the Milwaukee Parental Choice Program to make sure that that program has the best accountability and fiscal operations possible, working with those people to make sure that the schools that are part of that choice program, that are part of the schools that serve the children in Milwaukee, trying to make them better for parents, better choices for their parents. I've been working with other schools, Tanner High School, I know I've worked with them, on making sure that they have the connection with the technical college so that those students can go through a 3+1 program, graduate with a technical college degree after 4 years. We've been doing those things. We've been working with the school district to make sure that their elementary curriculum is more consistent, and we're almost there. We're getting there. Could you imagine being a third grader, what goes from school to school to school, and having essentially to start over because every school in this decentralized situation is different? We have been working on those problems, but to say that somehow this is just a Department of Public Instruction problem, that I just don't think is a recognition of the reality of the situation. It's a social service problem. It's a community problem. And if we look at it only as a school district problem, we won't solve it. We won't solve it. And that's one of the things. That's one of the reasons I have disagreements with your plan. It essentially shuts out people and puts people in decisions in the frame of a special interest group. That doesn't make sense to me.
Your statements of support for the Milwaukee Parental Choice Program confuse me because in communications with union members in the state, you have called the voucher schools in Milwaukee a privatization scheme.
Well, I'm sorry to interrupt.
Well, I would like to hear your reaction to that. Well, are they wrong? Did they get your take on the Milwaukee Parental Choice Program?
What I was referencing is some of the schools have been scheming, and those schools we have drummed out of the program. We have kept at least 20 to 30 schools out of the program recently, and in addition, we have removed schools during the program. Do we like to do that? Absolutely not. But the privatization, it is privatization, Rose. It is public money going to private schools. I don't know how else that can be described. It's not public money going to public schools. So that's that description. But, kind of getting lost in that small piece, I will tell you that we talk about the choice schools, and I know you want to take them statewide. I will tell you that I have a problem with that because the test scores that those schools are showing are no better than MPS's test scores.
I want to see that the choice schools in Milwaukee remain there for the responsible parents who have chosen those schools, for the schools that are making a difference. I have visited a number of those schools. Mm-hmm. I've been at St. Anthony's and St. Marcus. I've been at schools seeing the concrete results that they have in changing lives. That is no scheme.
Well, absolutely.
That is an answer. And for there to be private communication that goes out to union members saying privatization of public service means diminished accountability at an increased cost to taxpayers. Tony will actively oppose privatization schemes like voucher schools.
And I don't approve of those schools that are not making it. St. Anthony's is a good example. That's a good school. Why are you opposed, Rose, to increasing having accountability for these schools? You said it the other day at a debate. We can't do that because why should the voucher schools not be accountable? Why shouldn't they have test scores so that the $135 million that the state of Wisconsin invests in them, people know where it's going? I would bet that St. Anthony's would love to have those other schools take that test and report the results, and I hope to gosh they do force that.
I am in full support of firm accountability measures that assure taxpayers, parents, teachers, administrators that schools are serving students appropriately. What I'm not in favor of are the measures that are intended by the opposition to this program to whittle away at these schools, tinkering around the edges, death by a thousand cuts. That's what I said the other day, that I oppose the governor's move in his budget plan to close these schools over time, slowly by whittling away at their freedoms, whittling away at their abilities. The Department of Public Instruction has also been part of that. Last year in June, right at the beginning of the time when schools were beginning to negotiate contracts, DPI changed the certification rules for teachers in our charter schools. Those kinds of things, without public hearing, with under the guise of improved accountability, using that as the rationale.
Wasn't the guise,
always,
it's a law. I mean, this is the second.
There is accountability.
There's a second
These
time now that
schools have accountability with the parents who attend them. They have schools with their own board of directors.
Oh, I understand
They establish
that.
Accountability.
I started charter schools. I understand what charter schools are about. I don't need to lecture about charter schools. What I'm telling you is that we, in that situation with the charter school licensing, we were following the law. Just because we're all reformers doesn't mean that we can't be compliant. We have to be compliant to the law. I want to go back, though, to the Milwaukee Parental Choice Program, because we're talking about Milwaukee, and that is, you had said that you would support the accountability measure of testing of all those schools and having them report out those that test. I think I heard you say that. Are you in favor of that? And if you are, will you also, as you said in Milwaukee the other day, if a program is not working, you will end it?
Certainly, we have to have measures in place, as I just said, mm-hmm. that assure all of us, in particular our taxpayers, that we are responsibly using the funds to be assured that we are serving students in the best possible way. These schools do have measures of accountability in place. They actually earn their student body every year based on the success of the year before. Parents choose these schools freely. They can leave these schools if there are concerns about quality. And the state, the Department of Public Instruction, has a vital role, an active role, in measuring quality in those schools.
But how can we measure quality if they're not all tested and are not reported out by school?
There are other means of quality, other means of accountability,
so
besides the WKCE test, which I have already said,
and
there are doubts about the quality of those tests and the reliability of
okay
the results.
But it's okay for the public.
We're going to have to stop it there.
It's okay for the public schools to be held accountable
period.
With those same tests.
That's what you're saying. I'm not saying that. I express concern about those test results.
That's the end of the unmoderated period, but we do want to get back to the Milwaukee schools issue. You spent most of your time there talking about choice schools. What about the public school system there? What would you do to address the problems in the public schools of Milwaukee? First to you, Rose Fernandez.
I put out a plan early in this campaign, which can be found on my website, which is changedpi.com. It's a plan for a turnaround team for the MPS district, where we would put a panel of experts in charge of that district with the authority to hire and fire the superintendent, renegotiate work rules with the employees, look at pension contracts for employees, put a rigorous curriculum in place that has continuity across the district and the high expectations that we need so very badly, and be accountable for safety in all of the MPS buildings. This group of experts would be appointed by the mayor, the county executive, and the superintendent of the Department of Public Instruction. Frankly, it's high time that DPI take a role in the leadership of turning this district around. Once the path to success has been defined, it would be returned to the hands of the voters, either as one district or maybe as multiple districts, if that's what's determined.
Tony Evers?
Yeah, there has been no evidence to suggest that kind of breaking up the district or doing something with governance will make a difference. My concern with candidate Fernandez's proposal is that it, at the most important time, when we are desperately trying to bring this district together, suddenly we turn the district over to a special interest group and leave the kids and the parents high and dry. How do they fit into this organization? How will this, as I talked before, it's a community issue. I didn't hear you talk about how the social service agencies and the nutrition agencies and the teen pregnancy agencies, how are they all going to fit into this more comprehensive plan? It is more than just this turning it over to a special interest group. We really need to focus on what works, maintaining small class sizes. We have to ratchet up the accountability in Milwaukee. There's no question. I would be asking for more accountable funding so that categorical grants would be based on achievement. We also have to make sure that we amplify our after-school programs.
I have to cut you off there.
There's a lot to talk about.
Yes. There is.
We go next to another question, and this is the federal stimulus plan is expected to send some $800 million to Wisconsin schools over the next 3 years. How do you regard this money, and how should it be used, Tony Evers?
Well, there's several ways of looking at it, but I want to first start out by talking about a big picture. This is a historic event for every state in the country. What the president has said and what Congress has said to us, you folks, you educators, are the lever, one of those levers that can turn our economy around. And that's why we're providing you with this stimulus money. So that's why it's very important for us to make sure that we have a state superintendent on July 1 who has some experience with large sums of money and large federal programs. I operate a program of $5 billion in the state of Wisconsin. We have to make sure that we do this right. In addition, we can slide back to Milwaukee for a minute. I have also pledged that starting July, we will appoint a federal funds trustee who will overlook that $100 million that is going to the Milwaukee Public Schools. We have to make sure that money gets to the classroom.
Rose Fernandez.
I approach the stimulus funds with caution. I think that we have to be very well aware of the fact that those are short-term funds and that local school boards need to make decisions that they will be able to maintain over time. Within a short period of a couple of years, those funds won't be available anymore, and we need to approach them with that full knowledge and awareness. I find it curious that Deputy Superintendent Evers thinks that he would require a trustee to administer federal funds going into MPS. That leads me to wonder how, if he doesn't trust MPS to administer federal funds, how can we trust MPS to administer the funds that come from the state of Wisconsin or the funds that come from local taxpayers there?
I'd like to satisfy that curiosity.
You may go ahead and do so.
The fact of the matter is that under state law and state constitution, the expenditure of money is an absolutely local issue. The federal funds that come from the federal government to the state, through the Department of Public Instruction, we have direct authority for it. We have the ability not only to direct how that money is going to be spent, but we can also withhold money if we feel it's spent inadequately. That's the difference. I mean, the fact of the matter is we're a local control state, and decisions made by local funds and funds are
available. Would you follow that?
Not necessarily. I think that we have to weigh what the strings are that are tied to that money and what the benefits are that we could attain over time. And that will be, I'm in full agreement with the fact that is a decision best made in each locality. They're aware of the liability that they assume when they accept those funds.
All right. Thanks very much. Now it is time to wrap up with closing statements. We determined the order of the statements with a coin toss before we went on the air. Rose Fernandez won the toss and elected to go second. That means our first closing statement will come from Tony Evers.
Thank you very much, and it's been a great debate, and thank you, Candidate Fernandez, for your participation. This is a campaign and an election that does have clear choices, and I'm sure you heard them tonight. We have a different world view. I come from a public education background of 34 years that I believe makes me more have a greater ability to move this state forward. I've been a leader, I've been an innovator, and it's very important that we make sure that we have the broadest coalition, not a narrow coalition, but a broad coalition of people supporting the state superintendent and supporting the state superintendent's work. In addition, I just have to say one thing to my granddaughter, Tessa, who's watching this show tonight. She is absolutely one of the coolest kids in the state of Wisconsin. She's a kindergartner, and Tessa, all the kindergartners across the state of Wisconsin, I give you this pledge. 12 years from now, when you walk across that stage, I want to make sure that you have the best opportunities possible. And it's 8 o'clock, you need to go to bed.
And our final closing statement is from Rose Fernandez.
This is an exciting opportunity for us to change business as usual in Madison. I'm not part of the status quo. I'm not part of the entrenched bureaucracy. I have the freedom to have a fresh perspective and a sense of urgency about tackling the problems that matter most to the school children in Wisconsin. Whether you have school-age children or not, whether your children attend public school or they attend private school like some of mine do, you're an investor in our public schools. We're all in this together, and I think that it bears remembering during these days especially that pouring money at a problem doesn't solve it. That's true in business, it's true in government, and it's certainly true in public education. I think we have to have great concern about the return on the investment in education. We can and we must expect better outcomes for the dollars that we already spend on public education in Wisconsin. We're all in this together. I'll appreciate your votes on April 7th. Please visit changedpi.com for more details on my positions in the campaign. And remember to vote.
Thank you.
That concludes our state school superintendent candidate debate. The spring election is on April 7th. For more on the race in coming weeks, tune into Wisconsin Public Radio.
You can also follow the issues and campaigns on Here and Now next Friday night on Wisconsin Public Television and Radio. Tune in at 7 p.m. for a live one-hour debate between the candidates running for state Supreme Court. That We the People Wisconsin special airs next Friday. I'm Frederica Freiberg.
I'm Sean Johnson. Have a great weekend.
Thank you for watching Wisconsin Public Television. Now let us know what you think about the program you've just watched or any of our programs by calling 1-800-253-1255.